Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Tiger Minor League Report recap for week 9, I believe it is. Week 9, the minor league system, our Hillary Stillings. I'm Chris Brown and David, and you find us on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartMedia, and Stitcher. I want to thank the gentleman who wrote a review for Woodward Tigers and said some nice things about the minor league podcast, and forgive me for not remembering his username at the moment, but thank you. We just got a review yesterday, so I really appreciate it. So if you want to subscribe to our Woodward Tigers podcast, which talks about the team, which I think we might be doing one tomorrow as the Tigers are off and recapping the weekend of pain in the Bronx, that will be up probably some point tomorrow. So as the Tigers have this 2-game series with Pittsburgh again. I don't understand why we're forcing this narrative to have a rival with the Pirates, but whatever, it is what it is. And Pirates just been playing good baseball too. They won a series in LA and they were able to manhandle the Dodgers, which, yeah, it's strange too, because the Mets offense kind of woke up against the Dodgers today, but we'll get all into that. So coming up, we'll recap what I saw down in Lakeland. Thanks again to everybody down there, Terry, Sherry, and Kian, and welcome aboard. Hens highlights, yeah, we'll be getting here. Speaking of the Hens, we'll talk about them in a minute. But I want to thank everybody down there for the hospitality. I'm sad I didn't get to see my good friend James Shipman. His schedule is conflicted, but shout out to James to reach out and hopefully we'll grab a beer soon. And went to a place called Glory Days, which sounds exactly like the Bruce Springsteen song, which it was, if you're familiar with that. And they played that quite a bit in the restaurant. So, but yeah, it was hot, and we'll get to all that shortly. So let's start with the Mud Hens, who did not have a good week as far as in terms of the schedule. They were losing, of course, Cody Clemens, who got his first run scored today after he pinched it for Miguel Cabrera. And Toledo went 1-5. So, Chris, I'll start with you on the offense, and I'll get to David here in a second. In terms of Mudhead Bath, now that Cody Clemens is gone, who stepped up this week?
Well, it was kind of the vets this week.
I know
week.
Jamie Walker had a pretty
Trace Thompson.
Chris,
go ahead.
Yeah, Trace Thompson and Jamie Westbrook, they both have been having a heck of a week, and they've been shedding some light on a rather minute Mudhen squad since Cody Clemens graduated. Yeah, Trace Thompson's definitely taking the next step as of now. He's having a pretty hot start to June.
Yeah, he went 11 for 26 this week with 3 doubles and 3 homers. He had a big 3-run homer today that put them up 3-1. Looked like it was going to guide them to victory until they had another unfortunate blown save. Brendan Davis had a pretty good week too. The kind of interesting waiver claim. Really, just kind of a fun player to watch. He's got a really unusual closed stance. And he's tall and wiry and kind of looks like, reminds me of Alfonso Soriano at the plate. I don't think he has that kind of power or speed, but yeah, he's interesting. And then, you know, I think the big story in Toledo this week is just kind of the rehab, you know, rehab going on. So Austin Meadows was down there and he didn't do a whole lot. 2 for 13 with a home run, 2 walks in 4 games. He was kind of coming out after 3 or 4 plate appearances in most games. And then Riley Green, 6 for 25. He had a home run, a double. Got 7,000 people saying, call him up. 4 walks, a steal. But he was hitting, and since he's gone to this rehab assignment, and it includes down in Lakeland last week, he's just hitting a ton of ground balls right now, which I don't think is his MO, generally speaking. He may be more ground balls than fly balls in you know, overall, but I think he's still trying to get back into you know, his ideal swing. So we'll probably see him in the minors for a few more games, I assume. And then maybe tomorrow we find out he gets called up to Detroit.
Yeah, there's some interesting roster decisions that have to come down from that, as far as that goes. Because I know Austin Meadows had a home run, the first home run of the year for down in Toledo. So that was something to call him up about. So that will be, by the way, that we're thinking of some ideas for call him up. So if you have a nice t-shirt idea, I tried to do it last year. I went, so if you have a t-shirt idea to help us get that up, let me know. And we'll definitely post it in the shop. But yeah, that was just, it was one of those things where all weekend we saw that. David, in terms of pitching, what stood out for the Mudhens this week?
Well, at least for today, I'd like to say that Drew Hutchison, who, after taking a little bit of a break, after getting designated by the Tigers, he had a pretty decent run. One kind of standing out to me is, surprisingly enough, the two-pitch pitcher fastball changeup is Miguel Del Pozo. I know that he's not exactly Tigers fans' favorite, but if you've been looking at his slashes as of the week, we touched on it before as far as left-handed depth goes in the Tiger system. It's not exactly deep, so it's nice to see some lefties getting in some work, and they're doing okay. So, yeah, that's my take on it so far. And especially, I know we might touch on it a bit when we go to AA, but what's his name? Sam Howard, I think.
Yep, he's a lefty too.
Yeah, is he in AA or AAA? I'm not sure. I know
he's in Toledo.
Okay, yeah, he's putting it together as well recently. So, yeah, it's nice to see the very little left-handed depth we have in the system, putting it together, in my opinion, so far.
The reason why I wanted to put the Brandon Davis swing up there, because I wanted to kind of see what Chris was talking about, and I noticed right away, and you guys probably notice this too, his hands, both the way he kind of tucks in his hands as he's swinging in. I like his swing quite a bit there. That was the first time I kind of watched him extensively. Yeah, and Michael's absolutely right. There's been injuries across the board, but that's where the depth is coming in, because everybody, they have to pluck from Toledo, and right now Toledo's rotation has been a hodgepodge of folks. And right now, this week, it was the big week in terms of starter wise. The last Chase Anderson is the one staple that has been part of our staple, if you will, of the Toledo rotation. And
he struggled his last start too. He got bombed, I think, didn't he?
I believe he did. Yes, and another guy who got bombed again was Nivaldo Rodriguez. 5 innings, 8 hits, 2 runs, 2 walks, 1 strikeout. Again, I always think he got bombed only because it's just been able to. He is not. I think there's at one point had him on the 40-man roster. Maybe they're trying to recapture magic in a bottle. I'm not really sure, Chris. I don't know if you have any logical explanation behind that, but
no, we could never quite figure out. Every time we saw Nivaldo Rodriguez, his stuff did not jump off the page at all. But batters weren't squaring him up, so I don't know if there must be something funky going on with the pitch data, but. Yeah, and he's not a big strikeout guy, and so I don't know. He's like emergency depth at this point, at least for the big league club. We did get to see Tyler Alexander pitch a couple times, get one start and one relief appearance. I think they said that they're going to bring him back as a reliever.
Yeah, he pitched today, and Garrett Hill, he struggled a little bit last week, but I think he'll get it together. He's talented, but he was another noticeable Hens starting spot that we had as of last week. You know, it's kind of hard to shed light on a pitching staff after what did they have before yesterday, 4 losses in a row.
Yeah. Go ahead, Chris.
I was just saying that the thing about Hill so far, and, you know, I was there for his start last Sunday, he is really, it seems like he's trying too hard to throw strikes, and he's not throwing as many strikes. If that makes any sense. He's really trying to be fine and hit the corners all the time And maybe he has to because he doesn't have, you know, top-notch stuff. But I feel like he's going to turn it around at some point. I don't know if he's going to, you know, be dominant or anything like that, but I think he'll get it figured out eventually in AAA.
Oh, yeah, and I mean, that's the sorry to cut you off, Raj, but yeah, that's the one thing that even I'm gonna give you my 5 cent color analysis for pitching is that especially like Garrett Hill, he had 3 walks his last start. It's like after that 3rd walk, you start to get in your head. It's like I obviously can't hit those spots of the zone. So the one thing I'm gonna start doing is throwing it down the middle just to try and have some form of consistency. Mm-hmm. So that's like the point where you just get in your own head and you're like, oh my God, if I don't throw strikes, it's like this, these innings are just going to keep getting away from me. And, you know, your pitch count is going to keep going up. So, yeah, I mean, like you said, Chris, he certainly has the talent. Like this is only what, like his 2nd or 3rd start for the Mudhens.
I think, yeah, maybe 2nd, maybe 3rd. Yeah. Somewhere in there. Right? Yeah. But,
it's something
and he had, like, I think, similar trouble.
He's still got a red head.
Yeah, there's a kind of a thing going on with Toledo right now as far as we mentioned earlier with the injuries too, but there's one, I will say one positive takeaway in terms of what we've been able to see from the pitching side of things a little bit has been, you mentioned him earlier with Miguel Toposo. There was only Will Vest made an appearance before he was quickly summoned up to Detroit. But other than that, yeah, Drew Hutchinson had a good week this week. And, you know, Drew Carlton, who spent a majority of time in Toledo, Jose Ramirez happened to him. But other than that, he pitched not too bad in his call-up to Detroit, you know, as much as Drew Carlton can do. But there is the reason why I brought up Toledo is because the rotation is going to take a further hit because earlier in the week, Joey Wentz was cruising for Detroit in the 2nd game of the doubleheader, and now he'll look like he will hit the IL, I believe it was, with a left shoulder. Was it quad strain?
I think it was a shoulder strain. I want to say it was a shoulder. Yeah.
Which is not ideal for a pitcher.
Yeah.
A strain of any kind on the joints is just brutal. It's like he's got a road ahead of him. But that's something you never like to see.
Yeah, and especially because he was crude. I mean, he looked really good. I mean, that was one of the best starts. He was locating his fastball well. A lot of the majority of his start was fastball, but his curveball, it was down away location on it. He was able to dial in. And yeah, when I saw him coming out in the press box, we're like, what the? Another one? Come on. Really? Just anyway.
He was training the fastball really good. Yeah, it's like, I know people were talking about him lighting up the radar guns in spring training, but it's like he was able to put a lot of good ride in the fastball during his start, and yeah, I thought he looked really good.
Yeah, and again, that's also going to affect the rotation for Toledo, and it's going to be a kind of a next person up kind of situation. But we move on to Erie because Erie had a good week. They finished 5-1 on the week. And they do the splits in terms of how they do the regular season. Chris, you want to explain how that all works to the first league or first half and second half championships?
Yeah, so this is part of what some minor league leagues have done for years now, and Eastern League moved to it, I think, in 2019. But basically, they split the season in half because a lot of players come into the system after the draft and players move up and move down and all that stuff. So they split it in half. I think it's the first 76 days and then the next 75 days. So first half, second half. And basically whoever wins the division in the first half automatically gets a playoff spot. And whoever wins the division in the second half automatically gets his playoff spot. And then if you win overall, have the best record overall, but you didn't win either half, you're screwed. Which then that actually happened to Erie in 2019, 2018, I think. And they haven't been to the playoffs since 2013. So right now, yeah, they're a game ahead after a 5-1 week. And I don't know, I think they're probably 3 weeks left or 2.5 weeks left when they stop counting. So it's kind of a mini pennant race right now. And I think I think it probably means a fair amount to the players there. It certainly means a lot to the Seawolves organization.
Yeah, and so we actually had a question real quick from Robert Lesser. Rob, you can go ahead and ask the question whenever you're ready. Of course, yeah, we're always taking questions. I should mention, if you're on watching us on YouTube, please send in your questions there. Or if you get this link and want to tweet us questions, that's fine too. So while we wait for Robert's question, yeah, so the Seawolves right now are heading to Richmond, which I was talking to Greg earlier. They don't do traditionally well against the Flying Squirrels down there, and the Flying Squirrels are two games back for the Eastern League Southwest division. Again, I get it now in a way of how, like, if you're looking at the Eastern League and how it's shaped, I guess, you know, like, because Somerset, Hartford, Portland, New Hampshire, Reading, and Binghamton are all in the northern part. So that makes, yeah, Northeast, it makes sense, but it's still weird when you think of Eastern League and you see Southwest. I don't know. I would think that they have some sort of, like, they name it after, like, some famous person that played in the Eastern League or something, like the leaders and legends. Use the Big Ten reference, or how about the Mike Riviera Memorial Division or something like that, or some Eastern League hero. So here's a question from Robert. So unless I'm remembering incorrectly, Alex Berman really struggled in his debut season, but Hinch pretty publicly had him second the entire time because he believed Bregman would hit his way out of it. And I think that, and that relates to what we saw today. Special Torkelson batted second today and went, oh, I think he went 0 for 5.
0 for 5 with a strikeout, I believe. Yeah.
That was ugly. It was hard to keep up with the game because it was on freaking Peacock. And I don't have that, so I had to keep track of it on game day. But yeah, it was tough to watch the strike zone charts.
Oh, hey, Greg, long time listener, first time caller. Welcome to the show, Greg. Here on I'm doing my FM radio voice there. So,
I do remember Bregman getting off to a slow start, like in his first month.
He got his first hit in Detroit, didn't he? I think.
That sounds somebody else. But I think in his case, it was just like one of those. He started off like with like 1 for 30 or something like that. And then after that, he was fine. I don't think it was like a sustained 2 month struggle for him.
No, Robert, you're not reading it too much. That was a good question. I like that question a lot. That was actually a very good question. So,
and I think it is a good question to ask Hinch next time one of us gets down there to talk about.
I'll be down there Friday. So.
I'm going to try to get down there this weekend.
Please. It'd be something else cool to have somebody on the booth.
Well, Friday's my son's field day, so I probably can't do it Friday, but maybe Saturday. Anyway, go ahead, David.
Oh, I'm sorry, Chris. I was going to say, can I throw my 2 cents in on this question real quick?
Sure.
I mean, one thing you got to look at, this is the case for Trace Thompson as well in Toledo. Like, once we put him in the sixth slot, he started hitting a little better, but I don't know if you guys remember this has to be circa 2014 when we brought in Kinsler and we put him in the leadoff spot. We moved Austin Jackson down to fifth. And he was like, he almost hit a wall because like he couldn't, I don't think he was able to hit behind, he wasn't able to hit behind Miggy and Vimar all that well. And, but yeah, it's like even like, I think it was right before we traded him, we moved him back to the leadoff spot and he just kind of took off. But I don't know. I guess what I'm equating that to is like, you know, sometimes maybe you just need to switch up in the lineup. It's like, it can mean a lot.
No, and it definitely can because it can kind of, it sets them in the right mindset. And Torkelson does take a lot of pitches. So I can understand having him there versus at this point, you can even put him in leadoff. I mean, just because he gets and walks so much. And you're going to definitely need a bottle of Tito's after driving down to Richmond. But yeah, according to the drive is actually, wow, it's not that bad. 9 hours and 25 minutes, 623 miles from Detroit to Richmond, Virginia. So
I've gone through there many times on my way down to Norfolk and Virginia Beach. You get to Richmond, you're like, all right, I'm almost there. And then it's like 3 more hours. Like,
No, I've always wanted to go down to Virginia, but getting into the Seawolves, they had a really good week. Kerry Carpenter, congratulations to him. Eastern League Player of the Month, as he's been on a tear. Call him up, 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 call him up.
Yeah.
actually,
go ahead, because I needed a mental break from hearing that words or seeing that words so much this weekend.
One thing that has really impressed me about Erie so far over this past week is their formation of their two-headed monster in Reese Olson and Wilmer Flores. It's like both of these guys have just been pitching their heads off over the last weekend. It's been really impressive to watch. Like both Olson and Flores, their last starts, both were they both gave up. Did Flores go scoreless his last start? I think he did.
Go ahead.
Did who?
Flores.
He started today. He gave up two runs today.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Olson as well. He only gave up two runs his last start. And yeah, it's like the rotation has just been outstanding. And Erie's been having a good week because of it.
Yeah, which I wanted to get to first. I wanted to get in the hitting and then get in the pitching a little bit. And and that was it's something that, and Michael Meyer with a question in here. Carpenter will be the. Is he Rule 5 eligible? That's where I think.
Yeah, any college player from the 2019 draft will be Rule 5 eligible this year. So that means Kreidler, Lipsius, Carpenter. Is it Brendan White or was he 2018?
I think White was.
Maybe in 2018.
Yeah, 2018.
Hill, I think, 2019.
Yeah, Hill was 19. And by the way, this is a rotation for Erie this week. Greg put us in there. Olson Wednesday, Kirby Thursday, Solbak on Thursday, Austin Brugner Friday, Saturday Flores, and Sunday is Olson. And yeah, let's get right in the offense before we get into the pitching. In terms of this week, Kerry Carpenter had three home runs, drove in six. But the biggest news to me was Gage Workman, who's been struggled mightily in the month of May a little bit, but this week had a really good week. Putting up a slash line 381, 435, and 714, and an OPS over 1,000. And one of the things that stood, another part of it too, was he was hitting the ball very hard. And again, the stolen bases have come down, but I think we kind of expected that based off what we talked about before, Chris, about different levels and lower levels. You can kind of get over them more, and we get the higher levels a little harder. But talk about what you've seen this week. I'll start with you, Chris, before we get to David. What did you see this week in Gage Workman?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of what you get with Workman is he also had, I think, another four strikeout game. I want to say he struck out eight times, but when he makes contact, he does a lot of damage. And it was a couple doubles, I think, and a triple and a home run. And the triple was like a fly ball that was just misplayed, but you got to call it a triple. But the home run was legit, and the doubles, he hits the ball hard as hell. It's just he doesn't always hit it as much as we would like. What's funny is the offense was kind of led this week. Kerry Carpenter gets all the kind of attention because of what he's doing. It's kind of wild. But Quincy Deporte, I think, had the best week of anybody down there. And you do feel like if he's a veteran that they signed out of Indy Ball or whatever, but you feel like if Carpenter weren't doing what he was doing, people might be like, hey, what's up with Deporte? Can we call him up? Because he's having a really good year. So I don't know, he's been studying. It's nice to see that because it was kind of a down week for Parker Meadows and Dylan Dingler. Although again, it helps to watch the game. So you see like Dingler went 4 for 22. There was one diving play by an outfielder. Looked like he hurt his wrist on it too, but basically stole a hit from Dingler. It might've been a double. Like, you know, you see these things that it was good contact. He's really driving the ball to the opposite field, which is what we like to see. So, you know, a week is not enough to really tell about a guy with just that, but it was a solid offensive performance overall this week, I think.
What about you, David? What did you see in Erie this week on the offensive side of the ball?
Oh yeah. I mean, I can't remember the stat I sent you about Kerry Carpenter and the week he's been having. I texted that to you recently, didn't I? Where he's been hitting, like, I think pretty sure he hit like close, if not 500 over the last week. And like Chris said, Kerry Carpenter is hitting the ball as well pretty hard. One thing I want to touch on with Gage Workman is, and I think this plays in pretty good to, I'm happy that he's having a hot streak because, like, especially for switch hitters, because Workman's a switch hitter, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yes, yeah.
It's always nice to see switch hitters, like, heating up at the plate, especially because, you know, they have to do twice as much work as the normal lineup, because, like, especially if you're facing like a a lot of right-handed starters during a week, then you're going to be hitting left-handed for seven straight games and having 3 to 4 at-bats a game left-handed. And so it's really hard to keep track of your right-handed mechanics, especially. So, like, you got to be doing much more work from the other side of the plate as you are in games from the left side. So I like to see Workman heating up. But, yeah, Kerry Carpenter is just fantastic. It's, like, hitting the ball at all fields. He has a really controlled swing. It's, like, I think he has, like, a 417 average now on balls in play. So, like, yeah, it's, like, you can't ignore that, especially in Double-A, where you guys have mentioned where the pitching is a little bit more competitive as it would be in the lower, in the Single-A levels.
So, Chris, talk about bad balls in play, and how does that work exactly on the minor league level, and just in general for anybody out there who's not familiar with that stat?
Yeah, so batting average and balls in play, there's a long, like, you can go a long story back about all this, going back to, like, the early 2000s when they realized that it didn't, at the major league level at least, it didn't really matter who was pitching, including position players. If a hitter put the ball in play, it was going to end up being a hit. Like a 290 average to 310 average. That was just, like, no matter what. And it kind of blew everybody's mind, like, what's going on? And then, so that led to all the sort of defense independent stats like FIP and expected ERA and stuff like that. And so generally speaking, when you look at a BABIP, a batting average on balls in play, for pitchers, you can kind of gauge if they've been lucky or if they've been unlucky by their BABIP. And with hitters, it's the opposite way. You know, if it's, you know, 400, it means that they've been fortunate. They've been lucky on balls in play. And if it's 200, it seems like they've, you know, been hitting a bunch of atom balls. It's not entirely like that. There are some outliers because based on what kind of contact you make. So, like, I want to say Justin Verlander a couple of years ago had like a 220 batting average on balls in play and was like, oh, that's lucky. Well, it turns out that he just got a ton of weak pop-ups because that's the way he pitched. He pitched at the top of the zone. And if they put it in play, it was a pop-up or a home run, basically, which doesn't count toward BABIP because apparently a home run is not a ball in play by the funny rules. So in any event, so generally speaking, like a 400 BABIP in the minors, you'd be like, yeah, that guy's getting lucky. But things are a little bit squirrely in the minors. And we talked about this last year, I think, with Jacob Robson, who was running like a 490 BABIP because, you know, guys in the minors, the defense isn't as good. That's why they're in the minors. So if you put the ball in play, it's more likely going to be either an error or a hit just because guys aren't, you know, have the range, they don't have the arm, whatever. And also guys who are really skilled in hitting the ball very hard in the minors are going to run high BABIPs no matter what, just because they're that good. So, like, I think Riley Greens was like 380 last year. I was like, yeah, that's just fine. He's going to be good. So that's just a long, long way of saying that, like, yeah, what Kerry Carpenter's, his BABIP, I haven't checked to see what it is. But part of it could be luck. He might be finding holes. But part of it is he could just be crushing the ball, hitting it really hard, and getting it through guys. So, yeah, I haven't dug into that. But that's your 2-minute BABIP.
Thank you, Chris, because that makes it helps out for people out there who are not familiar with that. And Greg, the voice of the Erie Seawolves, who is in our YouTube chat, made a great comment about the great to see Workman make adjustments. Early hitting yesterday came out today and was locked in. And one player he mentioned to me earlier, we're discussing how in terms of underrated players or a player should be talked about more. He came up last week on the podcast was Chance Kirby, who has been, if you've watched him pitch, he can either start or relief. And we had a question about whether or not he was legitimate or not. And it was one of those questions where you never know because he's had a really good curveball to go with his fastball. And this week, as far as, he started six innings, 4 hits, 2 runs, and he struck out 5 and just has 1 walk. And this week he had a FIP of 0.83, but on the year he's been really good. And again, however the Seawolves want to use him, he seems like he's very versatile and goes out there and gets the job done. And this is a guy who is he going to be on a lot of prospect radars? Hell no. But is that okay? That's fine because this guy's a 25th round draft pick out of High Park Baptist High School, 25th round. And he's contributing to the Seawolves' really success. And David, did you see any, in terms of Chance Kirby, have you had a chance to look at his numbers and what is he able to do for the Seawolves?
One thing I really liked about him, especially in either or in a starting role, is his walk numbers aren't very high from what I've noticed. It's like he only had one walk his last start, and at least in my baseball history, your command over the zone, like I've always thought command and control are two different things. And I think especially being in a starting role, like when you get stretched out in longer outings, it's really hard to keep that command over the zone. Cause like you can have control for days, but like having command over all your pitches in relief outings compared to starting outings can be a lot tougher in my opinion. And I like to see that he's putting both of those things together in whatever role we put him in. So yeah, it's nice to see that he's contributing to the Erie staff well.
Yeah, you can't really. By the way, he went to UTSA, Texas San Antonio, the Roadrunners, which was always one of my favorite teams to play NCAA football. No, it's fine. He's listed on minor league baseball. He's listed as a high school. They don't list his college for some, maybe because UTSA is too long to put in there. But I just wanted to mention that because I loved playing with the Roadrunners in NCAA football 14 or whatever, the last one that came out for PlayStation. A pitcher like him is invaluable to any team. Just think about what Ronnie Garcia has been doing for the Tigers lately. This is a guy who's primarily a reliever, and you need a starter immediately, and you can stretch him out and go, all right, give us what you got. And so, yeah, Kirby's what? 4 starts, 12 outings this year. A 1.59 ERA, a 0.76 WHIP. That, like, over 40 innings, that's amazing. And I think I mentioned on the show the other week, like, and I just told you before the show, like, we saw him pitch, and I should know better at this point, but I wasn't really even paying attention. Like, yeah, I've heard of this guy. I he's fine. He's an org guy. Well, there are guys like this who, and I mentioned the two names on Sunday or whenever, Thursday. I mentioned Warwick Sopold and Spencer Watkins, two guys that were just kind of hanging around the minors, moving up slowly, and I never paid much attention to them. And then what do you know? They're both in the majors one day. And he was like, hey, I wish I would have paid more attention. And like, you see the improvement in his numbers from last year to this year. And basically his career numbers were not all that great, but he hung around. So you know the org must have liked something about him. And to David's point, yeah, he's just throwing strikes and getting guys out. And that's kind of the name of the game, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that one of the things he might be doing more is throwing that curveball, because that curveball he's throwing, or that slider, I think it's a curveball or slider. I mean, it drops off the face of the plane. It is a curveball. So, yeah, it has looked really good. It complements his fastball really well. And maybe like what the Tigers have done, and we noticed this with certain pitchers, is that they're just going, hey, throw your best stuff. Like they're taking the Houston Astros model to it. Who knows? I mean, in terms of spin data, we don't have that. I wish we had more data. Oh man, there's something. I know somebody that know that has all the data, but every time I ask them, he is the guy. Chris, you know who I'm referring to.
A guy I know. Him and her.
Guy, yeah. That guy. Yeah, but that guy, the guy I'm referring to, is a busy man. So try not to bug him too much, but.
And to our point earlier, I'm just checking. I was looking at his stats a little deeper. So Kirby right now has a 194 BABIP. So that would indicate some luck there. But he's also not giving up any home runs. So he might have just found a way to stifle hard contact. So that would be something that batted ball data and spin rate data and those things would help us with. But we can't have it all. So
he's really adjusted to the mold. I'm sorry. Did I cut out a little bit?
You're good. You're good. Go ahead.
You know, I was going to say, it's like the one thing I noticed was that he really adjusted good to the mold of if you can't be a power pitcher, like kill him with spin. And that's what he's doing. It's like a lot of his stuff has really good deception on it. And like when you're looking, like especially with like a curveball or sinker, you see a pitch coming in, like you think you're sitting on a fastball. You think it's going to be middle in. But all of a sudden, it's like out of the zone. You're breaking your bat on the shaft. It's like that's the one thing I've seen from him. I think that's working pretty good. It's like his curveball, like you said, Raj. It's like drops out of the zone pretty well. It's like he's been getting a lot of right-handed hitters on the outside with it pretty good. So yeah, that's fantastic.
No, I'm glad you noticed that, David, because that's one of the things that I was able to see on against right-handed hitters. And another good week from Brandon White, who pitched a pair of innings, and Wilmer Flores was the one that went early. I said, Greg mentioned earlier in the chat, three innings on Tuesday. So he pitched overall of eight innings this week, nine hits, two runs, just one home run, and struck out eight. So I don't want fans. What's up, Chris?
Well, I just Greg made a point earlier, and I watched that start. I clipped it, or I'm clipping it together, so we can. I'll throw it up on the YouTube. He did not have his normal electric stuff. Like, his breaking balls were still solid, but the fastball just wasn't getting. I think he got like there may have been one batter that he threw three fastballs right by him, but the fastball was getting hit by everybody, and he battled through it. And we've talked about this before. Like, sometimes that tells you more about a pitcher than when they're out there just completely dominating. And he had a couple got help from an outfield assist that maybe, you know, bought him some more time, and he made his way through five innings. It was nice to see that he could compete and go out there and win without his best stuff. And like, it shows you where we're, you know, where our expectations are with Flores this week or now, because he went eight innings this week and two earned runs, and it's like nine hits. Like, oh, what's wrong with him? Nine hits. And it was like eight strikeouts and one walk. So yeah, I mean, he's good, and sometimes pitchers struggle, and he fought through it. So.
Yeah, I mean, Chris, to touch on your point, the one thing I really like to see with Flores, and I know this may sound like a catch-22 here, but the fastball looked a little too straight, in my opinion. Like, I know that's kind of like you think of fastball, and that's what you think of, but like a lot of the stuff I was seeing from Flores is that he was like, with the velocity he had, it looked like he always had a lot of ride on his fastball. But if there's one thing, like, especially as a former catcher myself not too long ago, it's like the one thing I like to see from Flores is that he had a lot of stuff to fall back on. Because, like, you know, I've caught pitchers before that say, like, you know, I can't throw a fastball to save my life right now, or I can't get my changeup over. It's like, I need you to start calling more of this and less of this. I'm like, okay, we'll make it work. And That's something we saw from Flores today, and I think it paid dividends. It's like, it was fantastic to see how he adjusted, especially with one of his weapons in his arsenal is shut down momentarily.
Yeah, and that's a good job by Dylan Dingler. That's the kind of veteran leadership that he adds, and how good of a catcher he is as a receiver to make those adjustments for Flores. So let's move on to West Michigan. And first and foremost, Ward Vangel has a t-shirt idea. We'll get to that in a little bit. But the voice of the West Michigan Whitecaps, Dan Hasey, in our YouTube chat this evening.
The voice of the Omaha Storm Chasers.
Yes, yeah, Storm Chasers. Yes. Yeah, see, he was down. That was, we got to understand how that went. And so hopefully we'll be able to, and maybe him and, you know, it's the first time we've had two minor league announcers in the same chat. I don't know if
we get Dan and Greg to arm wrestle. I listen, and you know, we know both of these guys are great broadcasters, but you know, you get used to hearing, you just think like, hey, they know all these players because they watch it play every day. But I was listening to the broadcast, and Dan was his usual informative, entertaining self with these random Omaha guys that nobody really cares about. At least we don't.
Well, what about the Royals? Daniel, too. What about that? Was it Daniel Pastor? What's the guy's?
Pasquantino?
Yeah, Pasquantino. Yeah.
No, I mean, the Omaha has some good players, and that was in Indianapolis. The O'Neill Cruz was there. There were some good players. I was just joking. Like, you know, it's we get used to these guys broadcasting for our teams, right? And we forget that they're like legit, hardcore, really good professional broadcasters. So, yeah, they could probably broadcast hockey too. So, in any event, but yeah, West Michigan was Nathan handling West Michigan duties, and unfortunately, I don't know why Lake County is refusing to put cameras in. Fortunately, we had a couple looks from our buddies, Justin and Pat, I think. But other than that, we're relying on the voice of Nate Wengler.
Yeah, and we're not going to really do a statistical breakdown of both because we didn't see anything. And I always like to believe that, you know, instead of asking for somebody else's opinion or a scout or whatever, you want to have as much as visual evidence as possible of watching the game yourself. And so as far as like in terms of just like breaking down the box scores and stuff like that, we'll just kind of do a quick over for those two, Westberg for pitching and hitting. Michael Mayer in the YouTube chat is, Winston Perez still at West Michigan due to his defense? That's a Dan Hasey question. I think his defense has been inconsistent at times. And no, you're right. He does struggle with the throw, the simple stuff. But then sometimes he does flash good plays. So yeah, we sound like a broken record, but Cole Keith doing Cole Keith things, and he had a big week. He batted over 300, had a slugging percentage of 737, and a familiar face is back at West Michigan. Daniel Cabrera was sent down, and we know full well he can hit high A pitching. He batted 471 this week against Lake County. They went 3-3 overall, as the West Michigan is 23-28 on the season. But Akil Baddoo is also down there doing his rehab assignment, and
not a great week.
Three games.
It is important to remember that Akil Baddoo is like 3 weeks older than Daniel Cabrera.
Yes.
So.
Yes, but he also, unfortunately, to report this, he was 0-10
with five strikeouts in a walk. Yep. He's trying to find it. Let him find it in West Michigan. That's fine.
Yeah, yeah. And you know who else had a good week too is Corey Joyce, who had more 7 walks to 6 strikeouts and batted .353, and also had 2 home runs.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, he's kind of a fun, underrated player in the system. You don't hear a whole lot about him in the college shortstop. I think he's basically playing shortstop every day for him now. I don't think they've put Perez or Cruz there much lately, but like we mentioned, Cole Keith had a monster week, but it was mostly just a monster game that was good enough to supply him for the rest of the week. But yeah, he after a somewhat down week last week when he had like a 780 OPS or whatever, it's back up over 1,000 or 900. So. Yeah, he's doing his thing. And as far as Wenzel Perez goes, it's not – I don't think that, like, they're having him down there working. I think this is the case with a lot of guys who could theoretically move up. What's the corresponding move? Do you release Luis Carpio, who is, what, 24? I mean, he was a minor league free agent guy that they've been playing everywhere. Do you get rid of Naporti, who's bombing for the offense? Do you screw up the Erie offense or roster at all when they're going for a playoff bid? I just don't think there's any real rush for a lot of these guys. They're not like they're powering them up to the majors, right? And it used to be like this all the time. This was – guys would not get promoted basically until after the All-Star break. They'd get a chance to go to the All-Star game, and then they get promoted. That's just kind of the way it was. And now the All-Star games don't really happen anymore, but it's still – you'll see, I think, guys move around after the halfway point. Whenever that comes, I don't know, 3 weeks or so.
Yeah, especially because right now with the way everything's, the All-Star break this year is what, July 19th, right? So it's a week later.
Major League All-Star break?
Yeah. So, but in terms of pitching, let's quickly go through West Michigan's pitching this week, as they had a good, outside of Jordan Marks, everybody else had a pretty good week. Carlos Guzman.
I hadn't had a good one.
Yeah, I was just about to get to him. Carlos Guzman, 5 innings, 4 hits, 2 walks, 3 strikeouts. Kyler Montero, who's been struggling, had a really good start for him. He struck out 6 in 5 1/3 innings of work. Dylan Smith, kind of not seen his best stuff, but it's quite all right. But yeah, the story of the week is definitely Ty Madden. 6 innings, 3 hits, 1 run, and 7 strikeouts, a career high for him. And I wish we had more video or anything to say, but I'm not going to break down a box score if we didn't see anything. So sorry, just not.
No, you said career high innings, career high strikeouts, I believe. So that's
Yeah.
I'll say this in defense of Dylan Smith, that was the bonkers game where West Michigan hit 6 home runs, I think.
Oh and yeah, that's right. Yeah,
Smith had to sit for I don't know how long it was before he came back out for the 5th, and then he gave up. I think he gave up 2 home runs, and one of them was a two run homer in the 5th inning. So I think it's one of those things where like they were up like 9-2 at the time or whatever. So I don't know if he was out there with his full concentration in the 5th, but it was unfortunate they only went 3-3. It felt like it was gonna be better early in the week, but there were 3 high scoring games, and then the offense just kind of went away the last game.
Yeah. Go ahead, David.
Now I was gonna say the one thing I saw about West Michigan, and Roger touched on it, is for having a lot of shaky starting this as of the last week, it's like they've been putting together some pretty decent results. Like, I'm pretty sure they won four or five, seven. I think I know they took one from, or I'm sorry, hold on. I'm trying to remember in my head. Yeah, can't remember off the top of my head right now, but yeah, it's like, I know they, I think they took 4-7 as of this past week, 4-5-7, and like Madden and Guzman, like you touched on, were the only notable performances. But yeah, it's like, you really like how the offense has been picking up the pitching with these high scoring games.
Yeah, and at some point too, I feel sorry for Dan and Nathan if once Colt Keefe and Wenzel Perez graduates, and I mean, again, but maybe there's hope, because speaking of high A hitting, we go into low A hitting, as this week I was down in Lakeland, got a chance to see games on Wednesday and Thursday. Friday, there's a tropical storm warning in effect, and it ended up like just, it looked like it was going to rain, but it didn't, just a little bit of a bit of showers. And then, of course, had a doubleheader Saturday, and Jackson Job was scheduled to pitch Friday, and I was leaving Saturday. So, yeah, good times. But I did see two solid performances in pitching-wise from Garrett Burhan and Nick Davila, Davila?
I don't know. I've never actually heard his name pronounced.
Okay, so in terms of the entire week, Lakeland went 3-3 this week, but the entire staff did really well. Carlos Pena also had probably the best game of the week, 5 innings, 1 run, did not allow a hit. And they almost had a no-hitter going in that game, right, Chris?
They had a no-hitter going until through 7. And then Christian Tortosa came in, who was, one of the more frustrating pitchers in the system, because, like, you saw him, and he looked really good, right, Raj?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and that's – I think he's been doing that for, like, 4 years, where you see an outing from him every now and then that he looks fantastic. And then he struggled today and gave up. Yeah, they had a no-hitter through 7, and then they lost, I think, 4-3. I think he gave up a bunch of runs in one inning. But, Carlos Pena is he kind of reminds me of one of those old college lefties who would go to what was then low A, West Michigan, and dominate. The John Kiblers of the world.
Yes.
And
good call.
And because he's like a primary changeup pitcher. He throws more changeups than fastballs. But right. If you can execute a changeup against lower hitters, they don't really have much chance. So that's what he was doing, and it'll be fun to see him, but he tops out at like 91, 92, so I don't think he's going to dominate at higher levels unless he's, Tom Glavin. But I guess we'll have to find out once he moves up. But, yeah, Brent Herter keeps shoving. You saw Burhan. You said he looked pretty good, right?
Yeah, he had a rough couple innings, but the defense behind him a little bit struggled, but he settled down after that. Fastball is around 94, 95, has some good movement to it. And once in terms of the strike zone too, the strike zone was really, he got squeezed on a couple calls. It's a robot strike zone, but it was very awkward. But I thought he pitched really well. I thought he did a good job of recovering after it was also the fact that I think the field was so wet, something to do with it. I'm not really sure, but either way, I thought he pitched good. And in terms of the hitters, what I was able to see down there, had a really good week was Esni Chacon, who was a monster. He hit 500 this week. And here's a guy who plays the outfield, kind of looks like early Juan Encarnacion. So for anybody out there that remembers Juan Encarnacion, he has that kind of same build, lanky, skinny build. And I thought he, out of all that, anybody that saw this week, he impressed me. Like, he had a really good single up the middle. And then we had to leave Thursday because we were doing the podcast. Of course, the game we leave early, Lakeland decides to go ham on offense, of course. But I saw him play on Wednesday. Defensively, I thought he did fine. And I, again, that hit up the middle was a solid hit. It wasn't like no cheapy. And I really he really surprised me, because I've not heard much about him. Benitez, who we've talked about numerous times in the podcast, was not available. He was on the IL. Carlos Mendoza got a home run yesterday, that thanks to Sherry down there for posting that home run with the right field with it. And Isaac Pacheco, again, another good week. And he played shortstop. Defensively, he looked a lot better. He played third and short, and I thought he looked really good at short. Really speaking, when we saw him earlier this year in that first Jackson Job start where he made like 2 errors, he made some really tough plays, some throws on the run. Keen Carter also going to attest to that. Roberto Campos on a half swing, defensive swing, hit a bullet up the middle. Was it, I think you told me, Chris, it was 98 miles off the bat on that one.
I don't know if that was the one that was 98, but yeah, I mean, Campos hits the ball hard constantly. It's just not always in the air where it needs to be, but yeah, he's impressive, at least from the exit velocity standpoint. And you got to see him in person, so.
Yeah, I thought Campos looked really good. I really, for his age, he good pitch recognition. He didn't look, you know, silly on the box or anything. I thought he had a very, again, his swing is interesting to see. Like I said, a half swing. You think you see more loft at some point? Maybe there will. He'll probably grow into that. But very good hunt. Pacheco, same thing. Really, I really was came away. I know Manuel Sequeira, if you look at his numbers, did not. I saw one of his hits of the. He only had two hits this week in 21 at bats. I did see one of them, and he looks the part. He does only has a major league body, but then again, he's a little impatient at the plate. Mark Gurash and I argued about this about well, you know, he's not walking enough, but I think he'll come in time. But he, again, I thought he made really good contact and it also sounded really good off the bat. Defensively, he was fine. The Andres De La Cruz, I know they didn't have a good week either in terms of looking at the board, but I thought behind the plate wise, catch or in terms of defensive abilities behind the plate, got a really good job to catch, calling a good game. And his swing, I mean, he looks a little like, you know, he overswings a little bit, but there's a couple guys down there. I mean, again, Campos, but I would say probably Campos and Pacheco are the ones that stand out. But Chacon, this guy, there's not a lot about much of him. He's from Venezuela. He's 22 years old. And prior to these couple seasons, he's been in a complex league. He played in Lakeland a little bit last year, but he's off to a really good start right now, just in 12 games, batting 389, 463, and 472 with OPS of 935. And as far as does he get on base, or in terms of like walks and strikeouts, you know what? He actually does. It's not horrible. He's got 5 walks and 13 strikeouts. So he has a good, decent eye at the plate. But like I said, I don't know. Something to look out for.
Well, I want to say he stole almost 50 bags a couple years ago in the DSL.
I do have video of him stealing second base, and he's got a good quick first step. And that's what I liked about him in the outfield too. So there's a lot to like about him, whether he's going to be an org guy or not. I'm not really sure. I'd like to see him. I would have loved to see him some more throughout the series, but nevertheless, Chacon at all, like, again, just kind of came up and crept up there. As far as relief pitchers go, it was funny. We're just talking about how good he pitched. I was just talking about this with you earlier, Chris, about the left, because the Lakeland Fly Tigers have three lefties. Matt Walker's one of them. And I'm trying to think of the gentleman I was thinking of drawing a blank on. Cam Brown, by the way, who I really wanted to pitch, did not, he missed out. But Pena is one of them. We talked about Pena. Tortosa, I saw a pitch on Wednesday. I thought once he gets his command down, he has good riding action on his fastball, good velocity. He's just, his command is still ways to go. But I thought he looked good. Same thing with Matt Walker. Walker is more like a veteran at this point, but both lefties pitched back-to-back innings on Wednesday. So,
man, I think you mentioned Wilkell at the end of last week's show.
Yes.
Wilkell Hernandez, he's gone, I think, 14 consecutive scoreless innings, 23 strikeouts or 22 strikeouts, one walk over that time. He's regularly hitting 96. He's been up to 98. I think that he's a guy who may move relatively soon. Again, you know, there's not necessarily any rush, but that could be a useful bullpen arm throughout the course of the season.
You guys, well, before I'll ask you guys both, do you think he'll end up going to West Michigan or go to Erie?
I think he'll go back to West Michigan for at least for a little bit. But I don't think he's ever pitched in high A. I think he was in low A and then he got hurt.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I always thought, who am I thinking of that? I was thinking of Elvin Rodriguez that was in. Mm-hmm. I don't know, I got confused there for a moment. What about you, David? You think he's going to just go back? He's just going to move up one level?
Yeah, I think it's safe to say. From what you guys touched on, I think he has the stuff to move up another level. And like you said, the single A levels of pitching, it's a like you said, the biggest jump is single A to double A. But I think it couldn't hurt to see like how he could handle a new league with new hitters that have like a little bit better mechanics than what he's used to seeing. It's like that's what we were seeing out of Flores as well. It's like, as much as we would have wanted him to stay in West Michigan, it's always nice to see how pitchers can handle the next step and seeing how they pitch the hitters in a different league.
Yeah. And one of the things about, speaking of pitching, before I forget, a big elf in the room was the other prospect in the top 100 Baseball America list that came out this week, Jackson Job, who moved down a couple slots here in the baseball top 100 list. So Job pitched on Saturday, and from all accounts, Chris, looked pretty good. Three innings, three hits, one run, a pair of walks, and he got kind of bat pipped to death, correct?
Yeah, I think somebody in the Slack chat or the
Matt Discord
was paying attention to all the exit velos, and it was all like, you know, three hits per under 80 miles an hour, something like that. So,
yeah,
you know, Jackson Job moved down in the top 100 because a bunch of players have had great years so far, a couple awesome months, and so they moved up. And, you know, including some of the players who were drafted behind him, like Andrew Painter, the Phillies, a pitcher that's been dominating the Florida State League. But Andrew Painter, again, was kind of the number one arm in this class in that last year's draft class for many years. He was known for multiple years. Jackson Job really hasn't done nearly as much pitching as these other guys. I mean, it's just one of those things where it sounds like you're making excuses for him, but I just think that you kind of have to hold him to a different standard, even though he was the third overall pick. You can criticize the Tigers all you want for taking a guy who was not, you know, as advanced, but they saw something that they thought they could mold into an elite top of the rotation starter. So they took a chance on him. I don't know. Do we read into anything about Chad Littlefield getting demoted shortly after the draft? I don't know, maybe not, but he's been fine. He's been fine. I don't think there's any reason to panic. But I also think, like, yeah, you wouldn't look at his stats and go, this is, you know, a dominant future ace, but he's doing what he's supposed to do so far.
Yeah. And again, it's one of those things where I look at it as, I can understand why fans are frustrated, because the lack of hitting in the system right now is deafening, is 100% deafening. And I can understand the frustration with it. So, I mean, if we're being completely, what do you say, Chris? You're kind of like,
well, it's like, it's not like Jordan Lawler or Marcelo Meyer would be popping up to help the major league team this year. Anyway,
this is true.
Like,
yeah.
That's like 2023. It's already 2022. You're talking 2024 at the earliest for any of these guys.
Call them up. Yeah. So, I mean, again, it's just even I never heard that story before. Michael Mayer in our YouTube channel said that reminds him of a Bonderman story and the AGM throwing a chair into the wall because of his draft selection.
Wow. Yeah, that was in Moneyball, the book. In the movie, it was, I think the chair went through the window.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know if it was, I don't remember the exact details, but I think it might've been just as much that, like, you know, the guy they wanted wasn't there. Cause I think the Moneyball draft was also when they took like Nick Swisher and Jeremy Brown and all that stuff. So they, you know, I mean, they, you know, and Bonderman was pretty good until, I mean, he never did develop a changeup, but if Jackson Job had a Bonderman career, I think I'd be okay with it. I mean, you know, it's not ideal, but Bonderman was there for, you know, pitching game four of the ALDS against the Yankees, was it? He basically had like a perfect game in the sixth inning or something like that. Yeah. I mean, you know, whatever. But yeah. We like to highlight what he's doing, and I always tweet out how Job performed and how many pitches he threw or whatever. But again, I'm not going to put too much weight into stats in low A.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't mind, I'd like to nominate my pitcher of the week for Lakeland.
All right.
And it's actually, I don't think we've talked about him yet as of late, but Brant Herder, he had a heck of an outing for Lakeland, his last start, mm-hmm. and I got a chance to check out that start actually, and his stuff was looking really good. It's like I know his pitching performance is a bit kind of scarce for Lakeland lately, but like, yeah, he made two or three starts this past week, I want to say, and like both of them he gave up like one or two runs. So, or I think I know yeah, he made a start on the yeah.
No, his numbers. He's a big lefty who is way too good for low A. And it's just one of those things where they need him to get innings. So look at his stats right now. 1.93 ERA in 37 innings, 52 strikeouts to 5 walks. They're no match. Low A hitters are no match for Brent Herter's slider. And he will – it's another one. Well, he will be in West Michigan relatively soon. It's just when things start moving, which theoretically could begin tomorrow because tomorrow is the beginning of the Gulf Coast League. And also the two Dominican Summer League teams, and the rosters are up online, so you can look right now. You see that Rainer Castillo is going to be in the Gulf Coast League, even though he doesn't turn 18 for another couple weeks.
What site is that on, Chris? So I'll put it up on the YouTube channel.
It's I don't know how official these rosters are, but it's right here on Minor League Baseball. I'll put a link in the chat. Does that work?
Go ahead and put it up. Yeah.
Link in the chat. Tanner Kohlhepp is on the Florida Gulf Coast League Tigers roster right now, and it doesn't mark him as injured, so maybe he's going to be down there getting some innings. Somebody asked us about him last week, I think. Yeah, yes. I don't know if that's. Wait, what does it say? PS? What is that?
I just put in the.
Oh, I put in the HT.
Yeah. Put in the private chat. Put in the private chat. That'll work better.
I'm your private chatter, chatting for money.
Engineering on the fly.
There you go.
Thank you, Chris. All right, so go ahead and continue. I'll pull that up here quick.
Those games start at noon tomorrow. Their first game is at Lakeland on the backfield. But yeah, there's not a whole lot of names I think people will recognize other than, Rainer Castillo was their big money pitcher. Same class as Christian Santana, I believe, and Abel Bastidas. It looks like he's on the roster too. So
and the two Wilmer Feltons.
Wilmer Fenelon and Wilmer A. Fenelon, the other cousins. Clayton Campbell, right? We saw something about him. Is he the Aussie or the New Zealand kid?
New Zealand guy, yeah. He's like 17, 18 years old. Really, really young guy. And then I think they have Daniel Di Lamonte, the gentleman from Italy, is going to be on this team.
Yeah, it's like the United Nations down there. They got people from all sorts of continents. You got Iverson Leonardo, of course, down there. J.D. McLaughlin, who was, I think, their 20th round pick last year. Center fielder. Carlos Pellegrin from Cuba. Jesus Bolivar. Yeah, it's, I don't know. It'll be fun to keep track of that. Of course, no one will see any video of any of these guys unless somebody heads down there to the backfields, and even if they can. But
I'm excited to see how Adin Sarreyes does because, like, I know he's kind of fell through the cracks of international signings, but
He was he and Jose De La Cruz were the two big signings. What, 2019, 2018? Jeez, it seems like forever ago. But and De La Cruz was the guy who kind of jumped out first. But Reyes had some potential too, and it's easy to give up on these guys, even though they're like 21. Just because, like I said, they might even be 20. It feels like we've heard about them for years and years and years, and they haven't even been out of A-ball yet. But, yeah, Reyes
it's like, funny. Unfortunately, I think the Tigers have kind of a history of international signings struggling with them. It's like, I don't know if you guys remember him. Julio Martinez.
Yep.
That's a name. But, yeah, he was one of our other international signings, and he unfortunately didn't work out either. But
Did he even make it out of the Dominican? I don't even know if he made it out of the Dominican. Yeah, they had Pedro Martinez too. Pedro Martinez Jr., who I don't even know if he was supposedly related to Pedro Martinez, but not.
Speaking of which, by the way, Kian told me that he's going to try to make a comeback as a pitcher. He's learning how to pitch.
That sounds about right. If you're going to be a Pedro Martinez, you might as well try. Nephew of the great Ramon Martinez. And, but anyway.
I'm sorry. Terry talks to him, and that's what he told Terry. So, All right, so we are out of time. Thank you so much for listening to the Week 9 recap with the with everybody chiming in. Greg, again, the voice of the Erie Seawolves, Dan Hasty joined us this evening all on YouTube chat. We appreciate all the comments and support. And if you want to support our travels, because somebody asked me if we're going to Lakeland, if I'm going to Lakeland again, more than likely, unless our Patreon gets up a little bit. So if you want to go to Patreon, patreon.com/Tigers Minor League Report. I love the fact that it is a labor of love for us, and we love the experience. But if you really want to help us out in terms of giving us a few dollars a month that help us towards gas being, I'm not trying to tell you a sad story, but there's people out there who put Patreons for basically doing nothing, and we're out there trying to do all we can. So, yeah, patreon.com/Tigers Minor League Report. And I sound like Sally Struthers. I mean, like, you know, 30 cents a day.
Yeah, exactly. $1 a month. And
yeah, $1.
Too weak to move.
Too weak. $5 a gas. Gallon of gas.
Yeah, I saw it was $5.20 by my house. I was like, what,
$5.20?
When did that happen? Oof. Yeah. Like, I'm not driving anywhere ever again.
Good Lord. I have to get my bike fixed. And I'm actually thinking about, because my work is like 10 minutes away drive-wise, or like 7 minutes. I'm thinking about riding my bike to work and just drive, mm-hmm. like, you know, like if we go to, I mean, we get some trips to go to West Michigan coming up in June and July, because we're due to go back out there, and we're also due to go to Toledo too at some point. But mm-hmm. yeah, the Patreon just goes to support what we do in the podcast. And
in my teleportation research.
Yeah, exactly.
Just in the beginning stages.
Exactly. And now, and also, I'm going to buy a fly filter so that way nothing flies into your transportation. Anyways, yes. Obscure. Okay.
There's a new Cronenberg movie. Have you, really? Did you see that? The new Cronenberg. Yeah, that sounds like it's classic Cronenberg with all sorts of weird stuff going on in people's bodies. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going off the rails here. But
yeah, I don't know if anybody in this room knows David Cronenberg's work, but I'm sure if anybody does, Google it afterwards and find out. But, tomorrow will be a episode of Woodward Tigers where we critically recap the series. There'll probably be some roster moves to take out, look out for. So Gulf Coast League, so another league to pay attention to, is on the way, and there's no cameras for it, so we'll see what we can do and pull up the stats. For myself, David, and Chris, we'll talk to you next week. Have a good week, everybody. Crush your head!
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because I have a charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink? This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera.
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.